Hey, good afternoon. Welcome AM 950's Drive Time Show. Doug Padgett in here, 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock today, and a lot going on in the news, of course, because every day there seems to be so much that matters to those of us who listen to AM 950 going on the news, but especially here with the hearings around Supreme Court nominee Kavanaugh and what went on. And we're fortunate to have Jake Falaschini with us. Jake was, as he was just telling me before we came on air, became internet famous today as he was sitting in the row right near the protesters, many of those who would jump up and cause a disruption in the hearings. And Jake was right there. So, Jake, you work for the Center for American Progress. And I'm interested in your work there, what you're doing and why that put you in the Supreme Court hearing, in the Supreme Court justice hearing today and yesterday. What is it that that you're doing when you're there, and what's your impression of how this nomination is going and what has to be done to stop it?
Well, first off, thanks so much for having me on the program. So I'm the director of courts programs at the Center for American Progress. So I handle all of our work around the courts, including state courts and the federal judiciary. And so one of the things we've been very engaged on over the last 2 months is the Supreme Court fight over the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh and just everything that's at stake for the American public. We work on a program called Why Courts Matter, where we try to talk to the American public and policymakers about why the courts are important to so many of the values that we all hold dear, and how many of those could come under threat under a Kavanaugh nomination or a Kavanaugh confirmation, where we would then have a Supreme Court made up of five very conservative justices who have their eyes set on dismantling many of our civil and human rights.
Well, Jake, it's awfully important work, so I want to thank you for it. And I just want to ask, and I've heard this from a number of my friends who don't really, they don't follow the ins and outs of politics the way that I do, and they certainly don't follow the Supreme Court and nominations in the way that you would as a professional. And they've asked, like, hey, isn't this just, isn't he kind of just average for the sort of person that a conservative or a Republican president would nominate? Like, is there something about Kavanaugh himself that is an outlier as to what you will get from anytime you're going to have a Supreme Court justice nominated by a conservative Republican president?
You know, I think what makes Kavanaugh really unique and special is just how much a product of the insider DC swamp he really is. And his just real roots in partisanism and in the Republican establishment and the Republican machine, and not just the conservative legal machine, but very much the partisan Republican machine. You know, his first real job out of law school, you know, after clerking, was working for the Ken Starr investigation to try to indict a sitting president, a Democratic sitting president. After that, he goes and, you know, works on the Bush v. Gore campaign to ensure that people's votes in Florida wouldn't matter, and President Bush would become president of the United States. He's then rewarded for that by getting a cush job in the Office of Legal Counsel, and then from there is elevated to one of the most important positions in the Bush White House as the staff secretary, during which time, you know, we have no documents to see what it is that he actually did, because they've all been blocked from view, despite the Presidential Records Act that makes it illegal for those documents to be blocked from the public. Those are public documents. So, you know, he is a part of the D.C. partisan, you know, swamp.
Wow,
he
I
went
see.
To a elite private school here in D.C. His father was a, you know, a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. You know, that's what really, I think, sets him apart.
So it's not just his particular perspective. It's not just the way that he's ruled on cases. It's not just the papers that he's written. You're suggesting there's something about the entire package here that has framed someone so squarely in a political and a partisan political frame that it would. Does he seem then sort of unsuited for the role of a Supreme Court justice who is supposed to be nonpartisan in their role?
I mean, if that's what the public wants, is someone who really is coming into this unbiased and without, you know, preconceptions and not from a particular side, then yes, I would say that he is entirely and totally outside of that.
Were you tracking him before his nomination? Like, is he someone that, for you being the director of courts programs for the Center for American Progress, did you have him in your radar? Did you paid attention to his climb, and did you know that he was, you know, the kind of person that someday would be sitting where he's sitting on a day like today?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been tracking him for years, and his opinions coming out of the DC circuit. I was honestly surprised that he wasn't on Trump's initial list of 21, that he was, you know, hoping to potentially elevate to the Supreme Court. Then Kavanaugh made a couple of speeches and a couple of decisions while he was on the circuit court that I think elevated his status within the conservative community. And notably, there were a couple of Federalist Society conventions in between those times where he would have an opportunity to maybe speak with some conservative elite folks about why he wasn't on that list. And then, you know, not surprisingly, after making some statements about presidential and executive power, about a week and a half later, he was put on that list, which really, really makes you suspicious about, you know, why it is that he was nominated by Trump. So, yeah, he's definitely someone that we've been tracking as, you know, one of these kind of legal elite insiders from the conservative and partisan establishment that, you know, could potentially be elevated to the Supreme Court.
Now, one of the things that made big news yesterday was his response to one of the fathers of a student that was killed in Parkland School in Florida. And that when the man came up to shake his hand, Kavanaugh turned away and wouldn't, you know, was very skeptical and scowling at him, turned away and walked away. And my wife saw it, and she doesn't follow this level of detail very much. And she was just totally put off by the guy and his response and how harsh he was. And I don't want to put too much on this, but what I watched of the hearing even today, he doesn't seem to be a very nice person. I mean, his affect. Now, he might be in his heart. I don't know. He might be kind. I don't know. He might do generous things for people and live in a kindly fashion. But his affect, his way of presenting himself, feels very scowly and sort of heavy. Do you have any sense of that? Is he the kind of person that is warm, or has a nice sensibility to him? Or what I've seen on TV, do you think that reflects who he is, and does that impact his way of being a judge?
It's a very good question. What we're seeing of his exchange with the senators is very practiced, right? I mean, they spend a lot of time mooting this. He has several people try to prepare him with questions that they think might come from the various senators. And so, you know, what we're seeing is very rehearsed. It's theater. And what's not rehearsed are those moments like the moment where the father of the Parkland victim went up to him to shake his hand. That's not rehearsed. Those are the few sorts of moments wherein I think you start to see through the veil of what someone is really like. And what I saw yesterday, his response to that father just disgusted me. Yeah. I couldn't imagine how I could possibly have that response to someone like that coming to shake my hand. And I think most Americans really felt that way when they see the video. They have a really similar response. And I wanted to not assume some sort of malintent on his part. And so I watched the video several times from various angles to try to see whether or not, as the White House said, he was just interrupted by a security guard and that's why he turned around.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the many other excuses that they've tried to make up. And when you watch the video closely, it's just not the case. He clearly sees him. He recognizes him. There are seconds in there where he just has an opportunity to decide how he's going to react, and he turns around and walks away. And I just, you know, even if someone was my worst enemy, if they had suffered what that father had suffered, I just can't imagine that that's how I would respond to them.
Yeah, I felt similarly. What else have you noticed sitting in the courtroom that we wouldn't see either if, you know, in the clips that we would watch or if some of us are watching the sort of running feed on CNN or MSNBC during the day? What are you noticing in the courtroom about the feel? Does this feel any different than other Supreme Court hearings, justice hearings, or does it feel any different than what you think those of us who are seeing it on TV are noticing?
It feels so different. I haven't felt anything like this before in dozens and dozens of Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. I've never seen the kind of energy from the folks that are coming into the room and standing up and expressing their dissent. It's clearly getting under Senator Grassley's skin. I think even the Democratic senators are feeling the pressure and really upping their game, being more direct. And you know, oftentimes in the Senate Judiciary Committee and in the Senate in particular, there's an affability. You know, senators work very hard to develop good relationships with one another and to work with one another and to work across the aisle and to have genuinely collegial atmosphere with one another. That is less present in this hearing. The Democratic senators, I think are taking their role and responsibility in this very seriously and understanding that, you know, their vote in this is gonna be determinative for a lot of their constituents, you know, in the upcoming election cycle. Wow. And I truly hope that your listeners and you know everyone out there will see this as, you know, a reason to vote for or against their senators, because it is very important the role that they're performing with this hearing, and I hope voters will take it seriously.
Hey, that's Jake Falaschini. He's going to stick with us here over the break, and we're going to talk more about the hearing going on today to see if there will be approval given from the Senate to support the Kavanaugh nomination to the Supreme Court. It matters to a lot of us, and it should matter to the whole country. So we'll be back here after the break, AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Doug Pett.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Lowry Hill Meats, your neighborhood full-service butcher shop that works directly with family farms. Using whole animals gives Lowry Hill Meats the benefit of preparing custom cuts and dry aging. They offer beef, lamb, goat, pork, and poultry, including whole duck, roasting hens, turkey, quail, pheasant, and Cornish hens. Their sausages are made fresh in-house weekly using 40 rotating recipes. Try their handcrafted sandwiches. They are second to none. Lowry Hill Meats is located at 1934 Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis or online at lowryhillmeats.com.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Be sure to pick up your copy of this month's Natural Awakenings magazine, a free local guide to a healthier and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely, local, national, and global stories. Learn about alternative and complementary medicine, nutrition, fitness for body and mind, personal growth, sustainability, and much more. Natural Awakenings can be found at area health food stores, food co-ops, and retail locations. More information is available at naturaltwincities.com. That's naturaltwincities.com.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
sleep in the fields, we'll sleep by the rivers, and in the morning we'll make a plan. Well, if you can't make it, stay hard.
Hey, we're talking with Jake Falasini about the Supreme Court nomination hearings going on today over at the Senate. He's been in the room. He works for the Center for American Progress. He's director of courts program. And Jake, I was thinking when you were mentioning what you do and in your role there in the last segment, I was thinking, boy, when a Supreme Court justice retires, that must be like your high holiday for someone who does the work that you do, where you get to kick in and say, now I get to put my craft to its test. So I know this is a deadly serious topic and Kavanaugh needs to be stopped, but there must be something for you about this time when the nation's attention is focused on the selection and confirmation of a Supreme Court justice.
It's absolutely true. It's funny. I mean, or maybe it's not funny, but when we have dozens and dozens of lower court vacancies for very important district court and circuit court seats all across the country, there are, you know, over 700 of those lower court judges that are also appointed to lifetime appointments. And, you know, Trump has nominated over 150 of, or nearly 150 of those people to those positions. And, you know, sometimes you're jumping up and down, waving and screaming, trying to get the press's attention about them. And the vast majority of the cases that are filed in the federal courts are decided in those courts. And yet, you know, people don't seem to pay much attention to them. And when the Supreme Court comes up, that's when everyone's paying attention. And you get to speak with the public about why courts matter and why these cases matter and why the judges who are on them or on those courts matter. I wish we could have those conversations all the time for all of the different federal seats that open up.
Well, and you were mentioning before we came on the air that some of the work you were doing this afternoon between being there in the hearing and here on the show, that you were talking about the impact of a Kavanaugh placement on the court and the impact that would have on gun violence. Is that right? And can you say a little bit about that for people who need to put the pieces together about what his placement on the court would mean for our laws and how they impact violence and guns?
Yeah, I might have accidentally heard me sigh there, and that's just because this is an issue that's very near and dear to my heart, and one that where I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, many millions of Americans could have their lives impacted by by Kavanaugh being on the Supreme Court. But, you know, we've had five Supreme Court justices over the last decade or so that have rewritten our constitutional interpretation of the Second Amendment and the rights that those afford to people for owning guns. The Heller decision it was the first decision in American history that recognized that people have a right to, that Americans have a right to own weapons inside of their home for self-defense. But that is a private right to self-defense that is protected by the Second Amendment. Before that, the Supreme Court had only held over 200 years that that right was, that the Second Amendment right was limited to the right of serving in a militia, just as the Second Amendment clearly states in the prologue.
Yeah. Well, okay. Can I just pause you there, because that's interesting. Yeah. I've been making that argument for quite a while, and every time I make the argument and say, you know, it's been argued that it's been held by the Supreme Court that this is not for an individual person to own a weapon for their own purposes, but it's to have a formed militia. And I think that practically plays out in what we would now call the National Guard, that a state can have its own group of people to protect the state and not just have the federal government protect them. That's what I and when I say that to people, they look at me as if I have made that up, and that the entire period of time that Second Amendment has been interpreted as an individual personal right to own a weapon for whatever purpose you want to use it for. How has it been that that's such a common perception from so many people?
Because the NRA has spent millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to convince the American public that that is, you know, is the case, and they've essentially rewritten our history.
If you read
Michael Waldman's fantastic book, The Second Amendment, a biography, I think, you know, you'll have a very good sense of how the Second Amendment has been interpreted over time by the Supreme Court, and how that radically altered in Heller. And where Kavanaugh comes in is that Heller actually came back in front of the D.C. Circuit Court when he was on the bench in a case called Heller 2. In that opinion, in that decision, Kavanaugh actually wrote a dissent in Heller 2 where he wrote that the Second Amendment would be, you know, radically expanded to protect other types of gun ownership and to prohibit states and local
Wow.
authorities from limiting many, many different types of laws that are currently on the books all
like automatic
the
weapons
States.
And that kind of thing? You mean like automatic weapons?
He even said in his questioning with Feinstein today, all but said that he would find assault weapons bans unconstitutional under the Second Amendment.
Oh my gosh!
Which something like 90% of the American public feels that there should be assault weapons bans, and those laws currently exist across the country. But mm-hmm. he all but said that those should be ruled unconstitutional under the Second Amendment today in his back and forth with Senator Feinstein. It was very telling.
What do you believe it would take to stop this nomination? The Republicans seem to have the numbers on their side. I mean, there's one thing to sort of win the hearts and minds of the people who would be dissatisfied with him as seated as a justice. But what would it take to stop his being seated as a justice?
Yeah, I think the clearest win would be to be able to convince the two senators, two Republican senators who have said that they have reservations and are, you know, willing to be open-minded about Kavanaugh. And,
uh-huh.
you know, those two are Collins and Murkowski, Collins in Maine and Murkowski in Alaska. And then holding our Democrats who, you know, several of them did defect and voted to confirm Gorsuch to the bench. And so we need to hold those Democrats and hold them accountable, and then also win over Collins and Murkowski. There are lots of efforts taking place in both Maine and Alaska to convince those senators that Kavanaugh would be a vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, a vote to increase gun violence in America, you know, a vote to take away our health care. And I only hope that those senators will, you know, step up and be heroes once again for what's right and vote down Kavanaugh's nomination.
Is that what the protesters are saying in the room? It's a little hard from on the television coverage to hear what's happening. I know you were in the hearings yesterday and today. Is that what people are, when they're standing up and shouting or holding up a sign, are they on particular issues? What are you hearing in the court?
Yeah, that's a great question. There have been all sorts of issues that people were standing up and shouting out about. Some were talking about presidential power and, you know, Kavanaugh just being a vote for, you know, President Trump to escape any sort of accountability for his actions and his potential collusion with the Russian government to rig the election. Some were shouting about, voting rights and their right to vote. You know, one was saying that he was a vet and that he had a pre-existing condition and that, that a vote to confirm Kavanaugh could be a vote to kill him. And for some of these people, it is literally life and death. I mean, for folks who are on Obamacare and have pre-existing conditions, it could be for them a vote of life and death. There's currently a case in a district court in Texas that where there were hearings today where a district court judge ruled or said that he thinks that because the mandate is now gone because of the tax bill that the Republicans passed earlier this year, that makes the entire constitutional frame of the ACA unconstitutional. If that makes its way up to the Supreme Court, there goes pre-existing conditions coverage. And Kavanaugh could be the fifth and deciding vote on that. For some folks with pre-existing conditions and others that, you know, are alive because of Obamacare, this is literally a life and death issue for them.
Well, that's Jake Falasini. He works with the Center for American Progress and Director of Courts Programs. Jake, thanks for all your good work you do all the time, especially when all of us are paying attention around these Supreme Court nominations. Really appreciate it. Super helpful.
Thank you for having me on. And I just want to say I went to high school in Minnesota, so it's a great privilege to be on your show.
Ah, where? What high school did you go to?
Why is that a high school?
Ah. Wayzata High School. Fantastic. Thanks, Jake. Hey, we'll be back here even for the for our listeners out in Wayzata after the break. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
You just slipped something into my palm that you were gone.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts, Snap Construction, at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
Connections Radio Show is all about tapping into our hardwired hunger to connect. We examine meaningful connections to ourselves, our community, and the world around us. By opening the door to innovative insights by a wide variety of interesting guests, we'll make the connections to something bigger than ourselves. Join me, Lori Fitz, your host of Connections Radio Show, and together we'll make the connections. Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Summer's over and the kids are back in school. That means you can call Zero Res to clean up all the dirt your family dragged in from the outside. Their patented powered water will clean up the toughest messes and won't leave behind any smelly dirt-attracting residue. I even had them clean up a mess earlier this summer from a few nameless friends who got a little clumsy with the wings and barbecue sauce. Just call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com and ask for the AM 950 special. Three-room Zero Res abide starting at $149. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Hi, Minnesota. Norman Goldman here. Join me every weekday from 5 to 8 p.m. for some clarity, wit, and wisdom on the latest issues of the day here on AM 950. Today on the show, of course, we're following the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, but that new bombshell book from Bob Woodward has got everybody talking, and you know who is stewing. Join me for 3 live hours of the Norman Goldman Show every weeknight here from 5 to 8 on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for clear skies tonight with a low around 50, Thursday sunny with a high near 73, Friday sunny with a high near 74, and Saturday sunny with a high around 72.
Eat Local Minnesota is a resource to find truly independent Minnesota restaurants. Those restaurants feature high-quality food and unique eating experiences with great wines, local foods, microbrews, original dishes, vegetarian options, and much more. Find a full list of all those restaurants at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Lyrics of that great little Bruce Springsteen song are "The flag flying over the courthouse tell us there's some things that are set in stone, things we will do and things that we won't." And that's been a promise of the American story for a long time. We have not always lived up to those great promises. This country has not always been good to all of its people. It has not always been good to the planet. It has not always been good to people in other parts of the world. And when we see that as Americans and certainly as Minnesotans, we need to do something about it. We rise up and we say something, and we perfect the union. We try to make it better. That's one of the notions of progress. That's what for me is important idea of being a progressive, is that you want to progress and leave behind the old stories and step into the new ones. The ones that leave behind the stories that say some people are in and some people are out, and step into a world where we say that all people are involved in all ways, and leave behind the stories that say some people can have and some people are going to be the have-nots, and to say that all of us need all of our needs cared for. And that's not something to be embarrassed about. That's not something to be ashamed of, having our needs met, whether that's met by your people in your family, the people at your work, or the people in your larger community that we call our government, or even the good work that goes on with people in nonprofit organizations. I'm big into those. I run a couple of them. I'm a pastor, run one of those churches. I connect with nonprofits. They do really good work. And I will tell you, there's too much to be done in this country for any business, for any sector, for any nonprofit to ever accomplish. It takes all of us, and the largest organizing principle we have in this country is our politics. That's what we mean by the largest organizing entities. And whether that be at the city level, at the state level, at the county level, or at the federal level, we have to be organized in all of these places. That's why all this conversation about who our representatives are, what our policies are, this is why they matter, because that's how in this country we choose to care for one another, and we choose to care for our planet, and we choose to care along with those who are around the world. It matters in a whole lot of places, in a whole lot of ways. And I know, Brett, I really found that conversation with Jake from the Center for American Progress to be a daunting reality of how scary this Kavanaugh nomination is.
Yeah, it is very scary, because so many things we take it for granted that I don't think a lot of people even think about with our rights are on the line if we put this guy on the court. It's a 5-4 majority.
It's really something. So, when I asked Jake, how is this one different? If you get rid of Kavanaugh, if you move Kavanaugh aside, aren't you just going to have another one coming after it? And, you know, it's just going to be, it's like dodging a wave in the ocean. There's just another one coming. Isn't that what's essentially going to happen? And his response, I thought, was meaningful and should be heartening to all of us, that no, this is not just a normal conservative justice that's going to be appointed. There's something, I think his word was, he's so super swampy. He's so caught up in the partisan political edge, and it's a particular mean edge. And I'll tell you, it can be mean on all sides of the political argument, right? People on every side can have that kind of edgy, committed to an ideology that can feel harmful and mean. And it doesn't only fall on conservatives. I will say that when it does come from conservatives, it has a particular burn to it. It carries a certain kind of impact that's really scary. And to hear him say that Judge Kavanaugh carries that in his history, that from his family's upbringing, his education, his work experience, and his the people he has chosen to surround himself with, and the ones with whom he wants to seek the approval of. That is really scary. I think it's a good reminder, because this is what we see in Donald Trump, and I think we see it in some of our Congress people here too. I think Jason Lewis is very similar to this. Sometimes when you have someone who you realize there's something about them as a person that's not quite connecting with you, something that's not quite right, it can make you really unsure, right, about what's going to happen with that person. And I had that deep feeling about Donald Trump. So did a whole lot of other people, right? And they thought, well, I don't know, the system will fix it. The system will put the pressure on it. The same thing with Jason Lewis, right? The system will be the thing that will be the corrective. And one could think that about the Supreme Court. I was sitting there trying to give myself a little hope while Jake was talking about how much impact a Kavanaugh justiceship could have. And I kept thinking, well, he's only one of nine, right? So he's only one of nine, but he is one of five that would be in that traditionally understood in that conservative edge. And if there's something not right about the background, the history, the place that they're from, I think that's really powerful. All politics are local is true, and all politics are personal as well. I'll tell you.
I agree with that as well. And talking about how all politics are local, if you've been following this Kavanaugh hearing closely, if you're a Democrat, also keep in mind that, of course, here on the state Supreme Court, the governor appoints Supreme Court justices, and it's just important on that state level as well, because if you get Jeff Johnson appointing state Supreme Court justices, we could have that same problem we're having on the federal level right now, right down to the state level. Fortunately, we have a pretty reasonable state Supreme Court since Mark Dayton has, I think, appointed now, I think, a little over half the members of that Supreme Court. So it also trickles down to that local level as well.
Wow, that's that is an excellent point, Brett, that the appointment process tends to be a reflection of the chief executive. Now, sometimes, and people of every party have complained about that, be them governors or presidents, that they really didn't get the kind of synergy in the justice that they were appointing to their state or federal Supreme Court that they were hoping for. But they've across the system, I think states and certainly Minnesota have gotten better at this. So it's going to be that if there is a Republican, a Johnson administration, you're going to see a shift in the courts. And, you know, the people who care a lot about this are conservatives, right? They a lot of my conservative friends have said, I'm sticking with Trump. I'm sticking with the Republicans because of the courts. Because of the courts, you know, they sound like some sort of a repeating parrot. Because of the courts, they'll say, because of the courts. And this is what they mean. This is what they've been gunning for the whole time. So a lot of conservatives have been willing to set aside other issues that that don't matter as much to them as who's nominated to the district and to the federal and certainly the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and if we had a Republican majority on the state Supreme Court in Minnesota, do you think they would have struck down us legalizing gay marriage? Of course, at the federal level, we had that legalized later, but I'm guessing a Republican court probably would have struck that down. The $15 yep. minimum wage in Minneapolis, they probably would have found a way to strike that down as well. So it's very important on that state Supreme Court level as well.
Yeah, well, and very often the way legislation moves, the way it has a chance, the way that it gets supporters, is all seen in context. What I mean is that if a bill, and I think the right to marry bill is one of those, if it was perceived that it's just going to get struck down, the movement of supporters and of legislators to be behind it wouldn't have been there if they knew that this was going to be struck down, right? They would, as they like to, as people who like to use war metaphors would say, they would keep their powder dry. They're not going to spend it. They're not going to get it wet on that. They're going to wait until another time. So that's the, I think, good point that you're making, Brett, is that the context, the scenario gets set by who is at the executive level and who's in the Supreme Court, even the state of Minnesota, as to what issues are willing to be advanced at any given point.
I didn't even think of that angle. Yeah, if we had a Republican court, would they even have voted on that in the state legislature, even with a DFL majority? I didn't think of that angle, but I think you're probably right, being very pragmatic, thinking, well, it's going to get struck down by the court. Let's not even attempt to vote on this.
I mean, even on that issue, and I was heavily engaged in trying to bring about support for the right to marry in the state. It there was an awful lot of convincing that had to go on to say that it would even make its way through the legislature. If it made its way through the legislature, would the federal court strike it down? And there was a lot of, and I think it's the right thing you do. It's how you manage a calendar and a docket and what issues are going to take up people's hearts and minds and energy space. I mean, people can only care about so many things at a time, right? It's not because we're not caring. It's because we are so caring, we get invested in particular topics and it leaves out other ones. So the whole context, and it was very clear in the right to marry argument that people were saying, I don't think it really has a chance to make it. So if it doesn't have a chance, let's not advocate for it. And that's just a reality of how issues start to come up to the surface and how issues are moved through the entire process. And that one actually snuck up on a lot of people. It had much more support than people had imagined. And afterward, people thought, well, boy, had we known it had that level of support, we would have gone for this years ago, right? But you couldn't have known that. And that's what's at stake in these elections. That's what's at stake when it comes to who our legislators are, who our congresspeople are, of course, who our senators are. But in this governor's race, it's a really big deal. And so even if you would say that Walz is not quite the guy that I want, not quite the person that I would have hoped for, not quite the policies that I want, let this be a reminder of you this period of time in the selection of a Supreme Court justice that there, as Brett says, there's a lot of consequence that will come to the surface that senator who's recently passed away, John McCain, he's famous for having said, look, elections have consequences. We all have to live with them. Like, you know, they people get to appoint who they're going to appoint and policies are enforced. And that's a good thing for us to remember that the win of your party has an awful lot of effect on issues that matter, even if your own personal connection or desire or passion isn't there. And sometimes it's good to step back a click or two and to look at the entire scenario to see if it's something that, that someone should engage in. So on this, while the next 2 weeks or so are going to be news heavy with the Supreme Court justice battle, I'm hoping that people, Brent, as you said, will pay attention at the state level. And let's keep our fingers on the let's keep our pressure on the senators from Minnesota. I think it just really matters. Senator Klobuchar today was pushing in hard. But I think she could have pushed in even harder. We can talk about that maybe tomorrow. But I got a couple other bits here for our final segment. This is AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota, talking about Supreme Courts on a supremely important topic. We'll be back here after the break.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
Minnesota is home to the only major institution in North America devoted to Russian art, history, and culture. The Museum of Russian Art, located off 35W on Diamond Lake Road in South Minneapolis, can be your personal connection to extraordinary artists, stories, and context. We offer more exhibitions and events than ever before, from concerts and lectures to vodka tastings and more. Open daily, free parking, and a great Groupon deal. Find out more at tmora.org.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts, Snap Construction, at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
Hello, friends. I've been talking to you about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens, Minnesota's first green cemetery dedicated to celebrating life and protecting our environment. One of the many wonderful things they have is something called the Living Urn. Ashes are buried in an urn with seedlings, ultimately coming back to life as a glorious tree. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Why don't you log on to the website, mngreengraves.com. Learn more about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. See if it might be something that's meaningful for you.
Hey, Minnesota, this is David Pakman, and you can catch my show weeknights at 9 for an in-depth look at politics and current events on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, welcome back to AM 950. Drive time, 4:50, pushing 5 o'clock, second day home for a lot of those school teachers. All week long, I'm going to give you a little shout out. Really, really matters. Hey, Brett, I don't know if you know this, but I grew up playing golf and haven't golfed for much of my adult life. I sort of set it aside, but my son's in town, and so is my one of my really good friends, and we went out golfing today, this morning. And I went up. Well, thank you. Did just fine. I like to say I cheat a lot, so it makes a lot easier to score.
They're called mulligans, not cheating.
Yeah, I have a bag full of tricks when it comes to my golf cheating. You know, I move the ball around, maybe hit another one, pull a putt back, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, so we had a great time out there. We went to Brookview Golf Course over in Golden Valley. I grew up in Golden Valley, learned to play golf over at Brookview Golf Course. And man alive, they have turned that place into a fantastic center of activity over there. Apparently, and this is from the people there at Brookview Golf Course, a $19 million building project that they finished for like a clubhouse. It has a huge outdoor deck, lawn bowling, a big restaurant, a fancy bar. I had no idea. So I don't know if people are looking for a thing to do in Golden Valley or in and around Golden Valley at that Winnetka and Highway 55 or Louisiana Highway 12, 394, that area. Brookview Golf Course has got a little thing going on over there. So it's pretty fancy. I think we should reach out to them, see if they want to sponsor the good programming here at AM 950. Hey, I'm super glad that Randy from Coon Rapids called. Randy, I heard that you were going to be calling, and I was so thrilled because, Randy, I know that you you support Donald Trump, and you think he's doing great. And I feel for you, Randy, want to hear from you because I don't think that at all. I think he's a hazard to himself and to others. And should be taken off the road, as it were. So I know you think differently, and I want to be open to hearing that, and I think our listeners need to hear that too. You think things are going great, even though we live in a country divided.
Well, I think there's a lot of things that obviously could be better, but I think there's a lot of things that are going real well. You know, whenever I come across, when I'm talking with people, it's just me. I kind of always try to get, you know, politics in there one way. I just like to see, I like to hear other people's ideas, and I like to hear what they're thinking, whether it's what I'm thinking or whether it's totally opposite.
Good.
And
yeah,
most of the people I come across, they love everything about Donald Trump, except for if they could change anything, they wish the guy just wouldn't tweet. And the things that he says act somewhat childish. But I think a lot of people that I talk to, they're willing to kind of overlook some of those things that he says for the fact that they're very happy with the way the economy is going. They're very, I think they're just happy with a lot of the things that he ran on, that he is trying to get those things pushed through. And so many other politicians, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, I'm going to do this, do that when they're running. And then they get in there and then they do nothing. And I think
Randy, we've got 5 minutes. I'd love to chat about that with you because it's really helpful. It's curious to hear people say this, that like, hey, Trump's getting a lot of the stuff done that he wanted to get done. It seems to me that a lot of his promises that he's made and a lot of statements that he's made have not actually come to pass. The wall is not built. North Korea has not been disarmed. We've not solved the issue in Iran. We're going to have a great problem with, we can just disagree on taxes, that he is causing all kinds of strife with the tariffs around the country. He's caused great division within the United States. He said, hey, if you elect Hillary Clinton, you're going to have an administration embroiled in legal battles. Now we're nothing but embroiled in legal battles. It's just on that note, it's hard for me to get the argument, and I want you to make it for me because I'm willing to be convinced on this, that, no, he's actually doing the stuff that he said he was going to do. Like what?
Well, this is one of the things that I think I've kind of learned, you know, sitting back and watching and listening to all this stuff is, I think a lot of stuff with Donald Trump, we're in such a society today that everything is instant. You got all that information on your phone. You can check anything. Everything is so fast and so instant. And I just don't think that some of these things are instant. I don't think, like, the wall. Okay. Yeah, he tried to put a little push for it, a little bit of struggles. Now he's got to dial back, maybe make another push for it later. Okay. When you look at North Korea, I mean, he went beyond anything any other president's ever done. It isn't where we want it to be yet, but there's some progress. And I think now we're pulling back a little bit. We got to see how things are going to go. And I think that's how a lot of these things are going to have to play out.
Sure.
You're going for it, but it isn't. It's not like it's.
I'll give you that, Randy. Look, I give you the fact that it takes a while, but that's not what I hear from people. And honestly, that's not what I heard from you. What I heard from you and I hear from others who support Trump is, no, he's actually, I like the way things are going. He's doing the things. And I would say what I said to you, and then they'll say, well, it takes a while. So if the argument was he's trying to do the things that he said he was going to do, okay, I guess I could give you that. He's some areas he's trying. but he's not actually accomplishing them. And the thing that just can't get out of my mind is he's Donald Trump, the things he wants to do, the reason that they haven't been done before is because either they're not worth doing, they're a bad idea, tariffs on Canada, or they're not possible to do, like just go talk to Kim Jong-un and you'll figure it all out. Like so the idea that, well, it's taken him a while to build a wall or to change the economy or to solve things with North Korea. Yeah, right. That's why he shouldn't have said, when I get in, I'm just going to solve all that stuff. I'm going to solve all those problems. So, okay, that's my one sort of pushback on this. And can I just try one more with you? And that is this. This idea that what he says we should just set aside, like since when do conservatives say that the persona and the person of the presidency is so disposable that it doesn't really matter what they say, how they comport themselves, what they do, as long as, I don't know, he's trying on something. Since when does that feel like it's a conservative argument?
Well, I'm going to give you that one, because, you know, in all the past presidents, it's a very prestigious job and it was held to a certain standard. Yeah. And I don't think in a lot of aspects, when it comes to the things Donald Trump says, I don't think he's holding that end of the bargain up. And I think that's where a lot of people, even it doesn't matter if they're conservative or if they're pro-Trump or not, I think they wish they could just go, please, just don't do that. Focus on the other things and don't sit and get involved with this, you know, match, you know, with words back and forth with people and just some of the things that he says. It would be nice. I don't know if prior presidents, maybe they had handlers that dialed them back from saying things, because didn't say things like Donald Trump said.
Well, and honestly, they don't need to. Look, if I said and comported myself the way Donald Trump does on this show, and I'm literally a talk show host, and I couldn't behave the way he does and keep my job. You cannot just be insulting people. You cannot just be so full of such misinformation. Like literally, Chad, the owner of AM950, would be the guy who would say, you have to stop doing that job because you're rude to people. You're mean. You're bad for our our station. And you say things that aren't true. And for the love of it all, I run a talk show where you would think that's like the one place where you could say and do anything you want. And if I acted like Donald Trump, Chad should kick my butt on the street. All right. So, hey, Randy, I really appreciate your call. And I really do. You're a good sport. And I appreciate it. This is AM 950. Nick Patch, at least in for another day.